Welcome to the Property Couch, where each week you get to listen to two of Australia's leading property experts as they share with you the insider's guide to property investing.
Well, welcome again, folks, to the Property Couch, and you're here with Bryce Holdaway and Ben Kingsley, and we're giving you your insider's guide to property investing. How are you, Ben?
Well, Bryce, very well for this Friday.
Yes, it's a good day today, but we spent some time this week in Mildura. We were on the, we flew up old school, Rex with the old prop aeroplanes, landed in sunny Mildura. And one of the things we've been doing in this regional tour around Victoria is we're talking to certified practicing accountants about property investment. And typically they know and have been exposed to property investment concepts. So we've kind of been bringing what we call the property investment formula to them. So effectively herding the cats and bringing together all sorts of information about property investment and bring it into a nice digestible framework to help them understand. And so there's four areas within that property investment formula that we think any property investor needs to master, right?
Correct, Bryce. Basically, when we go and do these sessions, they're really about educating professionals about, you know, if they're private practice, how they would then talk to their clients and give them some guidance around the formula and getting all of the ducks in a row, I call it. So that's great. And then in terms of the actual formula, this has been something that obviously you and I have been working on for a long period of time in trying to make it into a framework that allows people to understand the sort of moving parts that make up a property investment strategy.
Yeah, and I think it's important too that we see a lot of property investors. We see a lot of decisions that they make. And it'd be fair to say that wouldn't be exaggerating to say that they see it just as an event rather than a process. And quite often starting with the doing rather than the thinking about the context, or as I like to say, they have the microscope view of property investing, whereas they should take a step back and take the telescope view of property investing.
Yeah, look, I mean, you wrap that up beautifully, Bryce. That's exactly what happens. I mean, they think that they just need to go out and buy a property and that the rising tide lifts all ships and it's as simple as that. And, you know, they think, oh, well, everyone else is doing it. And so there's a lot of people making bad decisions around property. And, you know, I'll talk about Sydney quickly. I think people in Sydney at the moment, you know, generally speaking, are paying 2017 prices for their properties today because I think some of these later gains that are occurring in valuations up there are going to be given back. So, you know, that's my genuine view. And so if you think about that logically, if you're buying today in Sydney from an investor's point of view, you're going to be paying interest for 2 years and you're going to see no capital growth and you sort of be, you know, waiting when that next phase of capital growth is. So part of, you know, what we want to talk about as unpacking these 4 points, these four pillars, I suppose, is to take you on that journey and make sure you understand exactly what's going on.
Yeah, I agree. Now, look, they are pillars is the right word to say. In fact, they're quite simplistic in, we'll describe them shortly, but they're quite simplistic, but they're certainly not easy to master. And I think one in particular, and we're going to start with that one today, you know, in terms of mastering, it's quite difficult. But let's talk about what they are. We've coined them the A, B, C, D of property investing. And they are the four areas. The A standing for asset selection. The B standing for borrowing capacity or borrowing power. C is cash flow management and D is defense. So over the next few weeks, we're going to talk about each of these pillars in turn because there's a lot that we can chat about. And as I said, it's pretty easy with property investment to think that just because I live in a home, therefore I know which one to choose. And that's often not the case. But today, instead of starting with A, we're actually going to start with the most difficult one, which is C, cash flow management.
Yeah, look, this is a passionate area of mine along with, you know, researching property. The reason why it is such a passionate area is because if we honestly have a think about how we manage money or the lack thereof of managing money, like a lot of people in Australia, there was a piece put together back in 2009, Paul Clitheroe headed up a steering group about understanding how households manage money. And what they did is they did a self-assessment test and they asked a series of questions. And those questions were around how well do you manage money? Now, 90% of households say that they manage money really well. Now, the statistics are wrong because, I mean, if you asked me the right question, which was, yeah, how do I think I manage my money? Well, you know, there's a dollar in the bank account at the end of the day, so I do all right, you know. And when you ask a question around money, there's a real, you know, there's a saying out there that the state of your wallet plays with your state of mind. And I think that's really true. So a lot of people think that, okay, when I'm managing money, all I need to do is balance the books. But when we get down to it, I mean, I ask a series of questions when I'm working with clients to build a property portfolio with them. And those questions are around an honest assessment of how well they manage the money. And if I was to just ask them, how well do you manage money? Oh, yeah, pretty well. And they say, okay, so do you do this? Do you measure and reconcile every dollar that you spend on your bank statements against, you know, what you've actually spent every month? Do you get your statements in there? Do you go and, you know, reconcile it? Well, no. Okay, so that's good money management. And then great money management is, do you then grab that information and do you forward project that information in terms of, do you know, okay, well, that's what you're spending money on today, but what about all the future changes in terms of how you're spending that money? So I say great money managers, elite money managers are forward forecasting the cost of money and their potential of using that money to put it to wealth creation purposes. Because if you don't spend money on investing, you can't make it. I mean, people can't just do nothing and expect that their wealth base is going to grow. So it's, again, you can see how passionate I'm getting about the subject.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's just because, you know, after I ask those questions, the honest response is, you know what? I just know that we're okay. Yeah. And I just know that there's a surplus at the end of the month. And that's great. We need a surplus in terms of understanding that. So I thought for the listeners, what we would do is basically talk through, you know, how you can track money and then basically how we determine that. And so we've got a set of ideas. Bryce, do you want to sort of talk about where we source money from?
Yeah. And before we go there, I just wanted to, because I think quite often people don't realise that running a household is like running a business. And I think the thing that holds most people back is their mindset, because the principles that we teach clients on how to manage their money are actually ridiculously simple. Anyone can do it. You'd agree, and we break it down to the lean, you know, the line of least resistance, where we take away complexity, we take away layer, and we bring it back down to brass tacks and simple as. And even then, it all comes back to mindset. It comes back to your views on money that you're given from generations prior. And like you say, if someone thinks that they've just got a couple of bucks left at the end of the month, so they've got a few dollars left over, that they're actually good money managers. Most people usually say they've got too much month left at the end of the money.
Great saying.
And in terms of household money, it's emotional, it's got mindset, it's got conditioning from the past, but it really is something that should be seen as you would run a business. A CEO wouldn't just say to you, there's a couple of bucks in the bank account, in the company bank account at the end of the day. They would plan it. Got to do that in your household as well.
You do. I wanted to jump in there halfway through the comment because, again...
That's unusual.
It's funny that me interrupting everything. So, I mean, come back to the basics. 30 years ago, 40 years ago, our grandparents would come home, Pop would put the money in the flour jars. The first flour jar was the mortgage jar. The second flour jar was the groceries and, you know, the household living costs. And the third flour jar was basically, you know, our savings. That was our nest egg. So fast forward to today, we've got a lot of things that are playing on the psyche of managing money. And they are, we've got access to these little plastic cards that allow us to get money. You know, credit cards have been the big explosion of why people don't have good money management sense, because they're spending this money, this limit, on their cards, and usually it's not their money.
Not their money, absolutely.
So people who use the cards well can actually, you know, use the bank's money for a period of time interest-free and then pay it off, so the money's sitting in offsets. But, well, you know, that's a story for another day when we talk about borrowings. So my message there is around just making sure people understand that cash flow management is the source of all things good. And if we get that right, we go into the great space of creating wealth.
I agree. We're spending a lot of time here talking about cash flow management and not really talking about investing, because it forms the cornerstone of success from what we see, and we see hundreds of portfolios of seeing people build significant portfolios, build portfolios that allow them to get their financial goals. But equally, it ensures that they don't go through a period of financial hemorrhage where they have to sell in a position of financial weakness. We can actually trade them through periods of time when maybe, you know, maternity leave or income fluctuation. So we think that the reason we started with cash flow management is simply, if we get this right and we can effectively trap the surplus at the end of the month, the rest of the journey with property investing can be quite straightforward. But look, there's a couple of things. You know, we've all got different sources of income, whether or not that's as a pay-as-you-go wage and salary earner, or whether or not you run a small, medium or large business and you draw income through that. But effectively, we all earn our income, and then we've got our committed money or our expenses. And there's a few areas that we spend our money on where there's no discretionary spend and we're unlikely to overspend. And that's really in our bills, our fixed payments and our provisioning. And so I always say that if Telstra sends you a bill for 108 bucks, 70 cents, you're not going to give them a tip, are you? And pay 110 bucks, you pay them $108.70. So there's no risk of overspending on your fixed costs. But where most people get it wrong is the discretionary spend.
They do. And what I think, you know what, it's a good idea. Why don't we post on the website this chart? So it's called our flow of money. So it's a nice little table that illustrates how we sort of where does money come from? You know, so what are our sources of money? And some, you know, obviously working for it, and you know, whether we're doing that PAYG or whether we, you know, we're self-employed, savings, borrowings, home equity. So we can grab this liquidity, we can grab this money, and then as Bryce was saying, we've got committed components of that: bills, fixed payments, provisioning, living and lifestyle, discretionary spending, and it's what we bring through that net. And what we've got through the other side. So, you know, we've got those commitments and then it's that surplus cash. And this is where obviously property shines. We'll get into that another day, but we've got choices. We can pay debt down. We can, you know, save the money. We can put it into super. We can generally invest it into shares and other alternatives, term deposits, or we can look at some leveraged investments. And when we're talking about leveraged investments, what we're trying to say is, you know, there's volatility in those, so we want to be very careful there. But that's ultimately where we're going in terms of trying to understand that and giving households tips into making sure that they also understand how that surplus changes. Because let's face it, let's talk about budgets, all right? Budgets are the main thing we're all taught about how to work with. Well, guess what? Here's a revelation. Budgets don't work 100%. In fact, I would only give them a 60 to 70% pass rate. That's because they're usually retrospective.
Their rear view vision mirror looks at what's going on, aren't they?
Yeah, we're driving forward and we're trying to make decisions on what's happened in the past. So, you know, perfect examples are things like, well, we're about to start a family. Mm. So we're going to go down to one income for a period of time. So that's going to affect our budget. The arrival of this child is going to have some one-off costs, as well as some ongoing costs in terms of feeding them, clothing them, the whole bit. So part of that is that everyone goes, too hard, you know, okay, we've got a rough budget, but that's too hard. I mean, you know, and it was. I mean, I remember when I was looking to do it when I was in my early to mid-20s, when I was building out the property portfolio, I was like, how do I get this right? You know, there's a lot of moving parts, there's indexation, the value of money decreases over time. So how do I work through that? What sort of wage increases am I going to earn? So there's all those moving parts. Everyone goes, oh, bugger this, too hard, can't do it. So what we're trying to say is you can do it. And with a good sense of understanding, you can actually start thinking about, okay, yep, before the bubs was arriving, we were saving $2,000 a month. Now we're going to go down by one income. So you can do some rough numbers and then determine that. And some people then sort of give up on investing until the kids are old enough.
Yeah.
And that's another dumb idea, because effectively, if you wait till you're 45 or 50 before you start investing, well, your best years of investing are behind you because of the accumulation and the compounding value you get from building that wealth. I mean, just this week and, you know, last week we talked, Joe Hockey floated the idea of getting access to super for first home buyers to buy property. Interesting concept. And in Singapore, they do it. And I believe in some parts of Hong Kong, they did it for a while as well. Now, the point there being is that the reason why the super industry is saying that's a dumb idea is because of the compound loss. So if you get $25,000 out of your super today, in 30 or 40 years' time, you're losing $140,000 in potential gain. Mm. So they're sort of saying that's crazy, especially when we don't have enough money to run the country for these retirees anyway. So I think that that's an important message. We need to understand where it comes from, and there's all those different types of resources.
Yeah, well, I guess you're talking some very technical terms there as well, and for that reason, there's so many things that people need to consider. Like you said, short term, medium, long term, and stuff that they leave to the domain of their accountant, or they leave to the domain of their financial planner or their property investment advisor. There's so much complexity to it, which makes it the hardest pillar to master, but it doesn't need to be hard. It can be straightforward. But I think you summed it up well before, that that we have now in the 21st century made money really complex, but it should just be a modern version of the JAR system.
Correct.
It should still be very simple. There's no need to add some complexity. And if you can get a handle on your cash flow management effectively, because really there's two schools of thought in the marketplace when it comes to property investing. The more popular school of thought that you often see in the books and the magazines is use debt to service debt. So if you've got some equity, use that to service ongoing equity. And the basic theory is if the property costs you $10,000 a year to hold a $500,000 property and it grows to be worth $1 million in, say, 10 years' time, you've spent effectively 10 times 10 years or $100,000 to hold the property. It's grown by $500,000, so your net's $400,000. But that's a really back of napkin, simplistic way to see it, because it's a white knuckle right.
Correct. You know, interest on interest capitalization is dangerous over the long term. When you get sophisticated and you really do get your level of knowledge to that higher understanding, having an interest capitalization strategy for a short period of time, say when we are down to one wage for a baby or something like that, and doing something there. And I'll give you a very quick example. When my wife was having our second child, we worked out without her income that we'd be going backwards $45,000 during that period. Mm. Okay, if we wanted to continue to live
scary
the same
for most
lifestyle,
people.
Most people would panic. Yeah. Okay, all right, well, I'm going to sell one of the investment properties. We need to get rid of it. That's just a dumb idea. What the right idea it was that, yeah, we had a facility there of $100,000. So which is a line of credit, we basically tracked through that period. We ended up going backwards about $25,000 over that time, but ultimately we got back on track. And guess what? I kept that property, which delivered me another 8% return for that year. Mm. So I was financially better off. And it's just things like that that people need to have an honest conversation with themselves to say, how good am I at this? And if I'm not that good, go and talk to someone about it.
Folks, if you didn't hear that, rewind and have a listen, because there was some real gold there. Basically, what a lot of people do is if they see that they're going to go backwards for a short period of time, they panic and they usually sell in a position of weakness rather than strength. Whereas what Ben was just talking about was you forward project well enough, you can see that you can trade your way out of these short-term fluctuations in income. And of course, if he was prepared to open up his portfolio, you know, that property that he was able to hold has now significantly contributed to him and his family's overall wealth. So that's some real gold there. Now, I guess the name of the game on the second, so the first one is using equity to service debt. The one that we prefer is to use surplus cash flow. And that's why we spent today's podcast talking about cash flow management. So again, the money shouldn't be complex. It should be quite simple. We don't think that budgets work on their own. They need to be surrounded by a system. The simpler the system, the better. And as I said before, a modern day version of the JARS is really what we're looking for. So we've talked about cash flow management today, Ben. Next week, we're going to talk about borrowing power. And that's an area that you really love.
Yeah, look, I mean, it's just another component of if we manage cash well, guess what? We can manage debt.
Mm.
If we manage debt, then effectively we can put other people's money to work to control bigger assets, which gives us an accelerated return. So that then leads into the property story. So we've got a couple of good weeks coming up where we're going to be getting knee deep into that type of conversation. So I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. So all right. Well, we're going to put that up on the website, the money flow chart, so that you can see what we were referring to today at thepropertycouch.com.au. We've really enjoyed bringing this to you. And if you've enjoyed these podcasts, please go to the iTunes store and give us a 5-star rating. and also comment on our Facebook and Instagram pages. So, Ben, it's been fun. As I said, next week we will be talking about borrowing power, arguably almost as critical as getting the asset selection right. So that'll be really great material. So until next week.
Arrivederci.
It sounds like that's our sign-off. So arrivederci. We'll see you next week.
Bye-bye.